We'll open with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. Feel free to unmute and join. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you. Well, the Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic.
Thank you so much, Helene, for being prepared at short notice.
All right. One of the simple practices I've used over the years to sustain my willingness to attend meetings is making a commitment to perform one job related to the group, whether serving coffee, putting out literature, acting as treasurer, or filling the position of secretary. Clearly, agreeing to speak at a meeting is also an excellent incentive for attendance. In this way, I remove all debates about whether I have the time, the energy, or the willingness to attend by simply recognizing that I have a job to do. While performing my chosen task, I'm assured that I am part of a gathering where however imperfectly, hearts are being healed. Many members find that Al-Anon service provides welcome healing benefits. Service offers many of us new experience and group participation. No longer isolated, we share a common welfare with other Al-Anon members and also with people still seeking help. A common bond unites us despite our many differences. As we reach out carrying Al-Anon's message of hope, we look for confirmation that our actions in fact support our common welfare. For guidance and support, we turn to the traditions and for our efforts, but we have individual responsibility for applying them. As we apply the traditions to our actions, we notice that these precepts for preserving unity can be applied to other experiences and other relationships. Our families, friends, business, and communities all provide fertile ground for practicing the principles of our traditions. As we do so, we find ourselves growing by leaps and bounds. In reaching out to others through Al-Anon service, we have the opportunity to share our unique experience and our personal recovery for common good. We have the chance to encourage detachment, acceptance, and serenity in a supportive environment and to get to know ourselves better, both strength and weaknesses in the process. We have the opportunity to contribute not only what we can to do, but more important, who we can be. By sharing our recovery, we strengthen its worldings in our own lives. By seeking to allow a higher power to work in and through us, we come to feel more fully the presence of that power in giving we receive. From when I got busy, I got better. Page 838. Sorry, I tried my best. That is pretty small print on my phone too.
Well, good job. Good job. Yeah, that's from, can you go back for a second to the previous slide? That is from when I got busy. It's pages 7 through 8, 38, and 55 through 56. Copyright Al-Anon Family Groups, 1994. Thank you, Sonia. Next slide, please. And can I get, how about Tom B. from Colorado? Can you read the February reading from pages 10 through 11? And when I got busy, I got better, but it's up on the screen if you don't have it.
Thank you. You're all looking at my wife's screen because we can't share speakers at the same time. February reading. Over the years, I've had the privilege of sponsoring a number of people. Each one has contributed to my own recovery by providing insight into my behavior. I learned, for example, that I couldn't take away another's pain. I could listen, share my experience, strength, and hope, and then let go with a silent prayer. I didn't need to let others' problems consume my thoughts for hours. Because I didn't have the heart to end the conversation, I had often spent hours on the phone. Gradually, I set limits and learned to respect my own need for time. Making time for myself continues to be difficult, but whenever I do it, it becomes easier. I've come to not take things personally. Many of those I sponsored came and went. Some were serious about building a relationship. Others only seemed capable of lip service. Still others outgrew me as their sponsor and moved on. With each situation, I came to realize that the change was part of a growth process for me as well as for those I sponsored. I occasionally refused a member's request to sponsor them. As a human being with my own needs, I have limits of time and energy I can devote to helping others. I can also recall the one and only time I had to terminate a sponsorship. It was because of my own pain when sponsoring a woman experiencing the trauma of sexual abuse. The painful awareness of having been sexually abused myself interfered with my ability to support her. Sponsorship has taught me so much. I felt the love and closeness for every person I've sponsored, and I've come to understand that there is no perfect method of sponsoring. Being non-judgmental, flexible, and relaxed has helped me both to offer guidance and to be a better person myself. I ask myself, am I willing to grow through sponsorship? From when I got busy, I got better, page 16, copyright, Al-Anon Family Group Headquarters, Inc., 1994.
Thank you very much for being willing to read on a moment's notice. Thank you very much for being able to speak on a moment's notice, if you will. So each of our three panelists will share for 15 minutes, and then the rest of the time will be used for your questions and possibly brief shares. So remember, any sharings are solely the opinion of the member and not that of the Arizona area or Al-Anon as a whole. So I'd like to introduce our first speaker, who is Patrick from Tucson. Go ahead and unmute and share, Patrick. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Patrick, grateful member of Al-Anon. Our reading today, Lessons in Honesty. Where I first began to learn about honesty, being honest with myself, was in my original home group. I felt like I was a pretty good communicator. And they told me that I needed to say my first name, share, then pass. And I thought that was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard of. So, but I stayed and I continued to learn. And what I learned about that was that I was not the greatest at communicating. I discovered that I wasn't good at all. I did not know how to listen. So as I began being honest with myself and recognizing that maybe there was a reason for this madness of talking in the way they did in this group, or not talking all over each other, like I was used to, I discovered that there was a better way to communicate, that there was this thing that they referred to in their welcome as loving interchange. I got to practice that in that original group, in the regular meeting. And I also learned in that regular meeting how to separate my loved one's behavior from them. I could still love them and not necessarily like their behavior. And I also learned that the strong opinion I had about their behavior, that emotion that I had attached to it, I could actually detach that emotion from their behavior. And I was able to be a little more sane in my thinking. I was more reasonable and rational in my feeling, thinking, and acting. And as I learned that in the regular meeting, I was invited to attend the business meeting. And I wondered, well, I didn't really care for business meetings, but I'd give it a try. In that business meeting, I began to realize that I could learn more deeply how to communicate. I not only learned how to listen better, but I learned what to bring to the conversation with my loved ones, what to leave out, how to stay focused on a particular topic. It was amazing to me. And then I discovered that I could learn even more deeply how to detach my emotion from my opinions that I had. I did not realize that I was opinionated, ego-driven. And so through that process, I started becoming a better friend to this higher power that only wanted what was best for me. I started treating my higher power the same way it treated me. I also found a sponsor, and I stayed and continued attending the meetings. I worked. I studied the steps with my friend. I learned the principles of the steps. And this is probably just me, but my mind's open to the idea that every single step is just chucked full of all these beautiful, virtuous principles. And that the traditions and the concepts are there to help me understand how to apply all of these beautiful principles. So I got a service sponsor that would guide me through those traditions and concepts. And I began learning how to apply all of the principles of this wonderful program to my life, how I treat others. But first, before that actually began, treating others really respectfully in the way they deserved, with my personal sponsor, I studied the fourth and fifth steps. And that is where I learned what intimate honesty really looked like for me. It was shortly after that time that I even learned it more deeply when I went to the 2018 International Convention. There, they offered a book. It was called Intimacy in the Alcoholic Relationship. And I thought, well, I don't need that. I'm not involved with anyone that's an alcoholic. You know, I'm not in an intimate relationship. And, but I do have a couple of members in my group that could really use them. So I picked up a couple of books just for them because I was a good Al-Anon. I get back to the room and my roommate, had his nose stuck in that book. And as far as I knew, he wasn't involved in an alcoholic relationship with anyone. And I asked him, I said, so why are you reading that book? And he pulled down the book and looked over the top and he just shook his head and went, oh, it's deep. That's all I needed to hear. I stuck my nose in that book and I'll tell you what, it was hard to pull it out. I might've even finished that book before he did, I don't know. But in that book, I discovered what real intimate honesty was, you know, that I needed to be intimately honest with myself before I could ever be intimately honest with anyone else. As I started applying those principles, I began to realize that I was trusting myself more. And as I trusted myself more, I started liking myself more. I thought I liked myself when I came into the rooms. I had no clue what loving myself was about. I didn't even like myself. But I began to like myself, and then I loved myself. And I continued to grow in that relationship with myself and with this higher power that wants only what's best for me. I began treating my higher power like the friend that he treated me. I would spend time with my higher power more regularly in the morning and developed a habit. Developed a habit in the evening of journaling, looking at my day and deciding, okay, do I need to make amends to myself anywhere? And if I did, I could call my sponsor. We'd work through the steps, starting with step one, right through 12, take about 15 minutes because we'd be working one specific item. I found that to be so helpful to me and still do. I use that regularly every time I need it. I learned how to be intimately honest with myself, and that's deep. I would then start sharing my experience, strength, and hope in meetings, what I'd been going through and how I was seeing things differently. Seeing the traditions and the concepts at an individual level, as opposed to just structure. And all of a sudden, the world got sick. I got sick back in February, 2020. And the doctor didn't know what it was at the time, but since realized that I had COVID. And I thought I was gonna die. I had to stay up one night because I knew if I closed my eyes, I wouldn't wake up the next morning. I invited my higher power in to guide. My higher power guided, and I survived. I never thought I would ever be grateful for having had COVID. But then, last month, I got it again. This time, it was much lighter. And I felt grateful for February of last year. I love my higher power. And I got better again. Just as I am getting better in my recovery. It's amazing what having a higher power does for me, for my outlook, for my attitude. My higher power gives me what I need when I need it. So along with that world sickness, technology boomed. We got Zoom. Amazing. Today, as I've shared at meetings about how I see my program, how the traditions and concepts guide me as an individual, and that, yes, they were made for structure, but now today, as I'm evolving in my program, I see that the structure is there also to help remind me how to apply all these beautiful principles that are in this program. And I share that at meetings. I share for my own recovery because it reinforces in my own mind, my thinking, how I view my program, what works for me. It's unique. My program does not necessarily reflect that of my sponsors or anyone else because we are all unique. So I share. And I let it begin with me. Members have been asking me from around the world to sponsor them because in their neck of the woods, nobody talks about the traditions. Nobody talks about the concepts. And they want what I have. And it is amazing to me in sharing with them, just even in like the first tradition, our common welfare should come first. In my mind, the thought came, well, what comes second? And I realized, well, that we're all different. I need to recognize we're all different. That gives me the opportunity to be able to apply these beautiful principles, principles like consideration, dignity, respect for others, their viewpoints, compassion, love, kindness. And as I focus on those things, while also remaining focused first on our common welfare, it gives all of us an opportunity to be more united. I used to think that I needed to strive to be unifying. I don't have to do that today. I just need to stay focused on my program. And the unity comes. It's a byproduct for me. And I like that. So who knows? Who knows what the future holds? I don't. It's none of my business. What's important for me is today. Am I inviting my higher power in? Am I being the friend to my higher power, to myself, and to others that my higher power is to me? This is what is important for me, for my program. Learning how to love unconditionally. Just like I love all of you here today. I don't even know you, but you're my family. Just family members I haven't met yet. But I love you the same way you already love me, in a very special way. So with that, I shall pass and give the remainder of my time to Carrie and Valley, should they need to use it. Have a great day.
Thanks, Patrick. Everyone, let's give him a little round of applause with the American Sign Language clap. Fantastic. Good stuff, Patrick. Thank you. Our second speaker today is Carrie from Denver, Colorado. You can go ahead and unmute and share. Thanks. Welcome.
Hey, y'all. I'm Carrie. And I was trying to think about how to start my chat, and I'll a little background about me. I grew up in a home where today what I see is other people's drinking bothered me. And in that home, I learned coping mechanisms and behaviors that didn't serve me well as an adult. And led to some pretty unhealthy relationship patterns. I attended Alateen long enough to, and was a big enough pain in the butt that my parents no longer made me go. And 11 years later, when the opportunity to come back and return to Al-Anon was presented to me, driving through the Spanish countryside on a work trip, I came back, and I've been in Al-Anon ever since. And the woman who presented to me the idea of coming back into recovery was my first sponsor. I've moved a couple times in the program. I started in Houston and moved to Georgia. I was in Georgia for a while, about 14 years, and then moved here to Colorado about 8.5 years ago. You know, I am not, I love the stories of folks who have had one sponsor for their entire recovery journey. I am not that person. After moving to Georgia, I eventually found a sponsor there because I found I needed to sit in meetings with my sponsor. My sponsor in Georgia, you know, the first time I ever told my story in front of the Georgia Assembly, she said, well, just tell your truth, Carrie. What are they going to do, argue with you? And she said, but I'll be sitting in the front row with my BS sign just in case. I brought that same concept out here to Colorado. My sponsor is on, so if you see a sign, she may not claim me. I don't know. But that is, you know, where I learned. What I share today in sponsorship and love and in honesty is culminated from you know, having had few sponsors in this program and learning different ways and evolving my program. Earlier in my program, I was a working mom. I was either single, newly married, a working mom with little kids with a travel job. And with all of that unmanageability going on, I was very hesitant to ever ever become a sponsor. I started with Alateen and being an EMEAS, and I was always available for a phone call, but something I struggled with early in my program was the belief that, you know, if I didn't have my stuff all sorted out and I still had unmanageability in my life, I clearly wasn't working my program hard enough to share it with anyone else as a sponsor. And so I struggled to make that commitment early on. What I did do was keep my ears open and learn from my sponsors and learn to have relationships and learn to work on the behaviors that did not serve me well. In those relationships, I learned about boundaries. I learned about how I was treated, and I learned how to be a better person in my own recovery. Keep my commitments, be on time, do the things that made my life manageable. I learned that their job was to take me back to my higher power when I got far afield. And I learned how to love. And I learned how to be loved. You know, I struggled for many years in this program. I lived in, my home situation was not great. And all the work I did, I did not have the clarity I needed to do to make a change. So I kept working my program. And as I said, my belief was that I just needed to keep working harder and harder. And in all that struggle and all that time, no one ever told me what to do. They walked with me. They listened to me. They led me back to my higher power, and we worked steps. They taught me about traditions and how to be a better person in a relationship. They taught me about honesty. First, learning to be honest with myself and with others. Because you see, one of my beliefs was, and I don't know where it came from, but it was easier to tell a lie sometimes than the truth, when the truth was just as easy. But I learned how that did not serve me. They taught me how to be a better mom, how to work with my kids and listen to them. And today, you know, I can work with my kids and not give them advice, even when asked. Oh, you ask me, and that's an open invitation, right? But to learn how to talk to them and share with them my experience so they can make their own decisions. And I get to watch that growth. So having worked on my belief that I clearly, if I had that much unmanageability in my life, I clearly wasn't working my program hard enough and I had nothing to share. I worked hard enough on that and worked through that with my sponsor and, worked through that with the God of my understanding. And now I sponsor. And I get to share with my sponsees that honesty and that love that I was given, because it's about giving it away, what was so freely given to me. And it's put into perspective a lot of the pain I put my sponsors through in the struggles that I had. And, when my life was unmanageable and my sponsors were there for me, but did not allow me to make their life unmanageable, I learned those boundaries. As I said, I learned how to keep commitments. And now I learned how to use my voice and, keep my life manageable, and how to set boundaries and how to be available, but not overwhelmed. I take this into my work life as a leader and a manager, and I can share that same philosophy of sponsorship and what I've learned here for, you know, with coworkers. And I can be a person of integrity at work too, because I can keep confidentiality. I cannot give advice, but I can share my experience, strength, and hope, and give that to my coworkers. So these relationships that started on a countryside in Spain, that traveled through North Georgia and out here to Colorado, I continue to receive, and it every day shapes how I am as a sponsor and what I share with my sponsees. And I'm grateful that for that. This talks about lessons in honesty. And it is also honesty for me in looking at my behavior with sponsees and, you know, trying not to steer, because today I get presented with a lot of opportunity to steer based on my my experience, and trying to stop and say, this is my experience. I don't know what will work for you. I don't, but let's, you know, bring your higher power into this. Where is your higher power? Have you prayed about that? And lead them back to their higher power. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for the relationships. They continue to feed my program and my recovery as well. So I think I will leave it there. Thank you very much for asking me to speak today.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Everybody, let's give her a round of applause with the American Sign Language symbol for applause. Fantastic. Yes, thank you very much for sharing, especially the Alateen perspective. The next speaker is Valley from North Virginia. Welcome. Unmute and share.
Great. Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Valley, and I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon Family Groups. And, I love this. I love this experience. So I have to, you know, when I was asked about this, I have to say that one of the immediate thoughts that came into mind for me was about something I had actually heard in, they did a movie about Lois's life, and I heard something in there. And so I started looking through the literature I started looking through the literature. Can you guys still hear me? Okay. Looking for this concept that I had heard, which is that fundamentally in the bottom of it all, service is about making sure we are taking care of our own recovery. And I found something that pretty closely matches it in Lois Remembers. And it's when we're still talking about what's happening with Bill in her life. And in Lois Remembers on page 95, it says, "Then he remembered he was an alcoholic. Although he had not permanently sobered up anyone in New York, simply trying to help others had kept him from even thinking of drinking. He realized he must immediately find another alcoholic to work on." And I think for me, that's the summary of this idea, which is that I do service because it saves my life every day. That's what I was taught from the very beginning of my recovery. And, but I went into it a little differently. So I grew up in the family disease of alcoholism, and my job was, I was the competent one. I was the fixer. I did things. I made sure everything, went well. When we were having financial troubles, I jumped in. When we were having pretty much any kinds of troubles, I jumped in. And that's what I knew. So when I finally reached the point that I couldn't keep going anymore, and I found these rooms, after a little while of sitting back and being afraid to really reveal who I was And because I was afraid you guys would ask me not to stay, an opportunity came up in my home group to be of service. And I thought, oh my gosh, like everything about how I had grown up in the disease was there as an opportunity. If I do, I may have an opportunity to feel like I belong. And, you know, I was very lonely growing up in the disease. And so when I saw that chance in where I came into a program in Calgary, Alberta, we each group took the phone list for the AIS for a month and they needed a coordinator. And so I volunteered because I could do that. I'm like, I can coordinate that. And what it allowed me to do was feel a little bit like I belonged. And service really helped me from the beginning feel like I belonged. And I didn't belong anywhere. I didn't feel like I was okay anywhere. But in those moments of being a part of, I felt like I belonged. And so it was actually being of service within the meetings that gave me the courage to make a huge move in my life. I moved from Calgary, Alberta to Tucson, Arizona, because I knew there were going to be people that would welcome me. And I knew that I could find another place that I belonged. So when I made that move, I had an opportunity to become a group rep. And which by opportunity, I mean, I walked into the meeting and somebody said, hey, we're looking for a group rep. And I raised my hand and everybody jumped on that. Yeah, we got a live one. And I became the group rep. And I learned about being responsible, but not taking on the world through being a group rep. I mean, that was the first place that I learned to not get into somebody else's business outside of just my family. It taught me about, hey, looking in every part of my life and seeing what part of this is really mine to take on. And that was, of course, because I immediately went and took on somebody else's role without asking them, because that's how I learn. I learn by messing up lots and lots. And Al-Anon teaches me that that's okay, because you all will love me and keep wanting me to show up even when I mess up. And with kindness and love, you will help me to walk it through. My sponsor in that case just asked me some questions. She said, so you just went through the literature box and cleaned it up? Well, yeah, because it needed to be cleaned up. I saw a problem and I fixed it. She said, did you talk to, you know, the group about it? Did you talk to the literature person about it? Well, no, because, you know, I got things to do and I can contribute. And so she helped me walk it through. She walked through the principles, right, of concept 10 in terms of double-headed management. And she did it with love and grace. And that's something that has stayed with me. It has allowed me to have those conversations in my family. It's allowed me to have those conversations today in my work when people come in and are doing something and it's maybe stepping outside of their responsibility. We can have a conversation about it. That wasn't something that I learned growing up in the family disease of alcoholism. In the family disease of alcoholism, we learned that you did something, you did it wrong, and you were shamed for that for some period of time. What a gift. What a gift to be able to give people the opportunity to walk through mistakes and learn. You know, that I received from you all. So, you know, there's so much that is in this one lesson in on honesty in terms of being able to not let my others' problems consume me for hours. That was part of how I came into this program. And being a sponsor has very much taught me how to do that. When I first became a sponsor, I thought there was a specific way you had to do it. I, of course, wanted to do it absolutely right. And again, I had a wonderful sponsor who reminded me that it was not my job to help somebody else find a perfect recovery. My job is there to walk beside them and to be myself. And that was new and different for me, to be able to be myself and be enough. And that's the very first thing that I learned out of being a sponsor, is that I'm enough as I am. I'm where I am in my recovery, and I don't need to be somewhere else, which is a lesson today that serves me very, very well, because I have a huge ego and I can often think that I have the answers. I can often think that I know the solution. And when I go to that place, I block out the God of my understanding and I cease to be able to hear others. But when I am enough as who I am, and I don't have to be more, and I don't have to show people that I am more, then I become open. It talks here about being non-judgmental, flexible, and relaxed has helped me to offer both guidance and to be a better person myself. Because sponsoring, listening to others, having compassion for others, being sponsored, and being heard, and being reminded that I am enough, allows me to know that everybody else is that way too. And we are all doing the best we can. So part of my journey in sponsoring has been learning boundaries. And one of the big ways that I learned boundaries was that as I was sponsoring, well, there was kind of two ways. One was that I started taking on too many sponsees. If you asked me, well, then I mean, you know, I must say yes. So I better take on and move forward with that. And that, you know, it's just lessons over and over again in ego, is that when I say yes, I am not being kind and considerate to others. I am not being thoughtful and responsible to others. And many times I'm not being thoughtful and responsible to myself. So I went through a time of having many sponsees, and at the same time, my job got crazy busy and I was doing service as well in the area, and it became too much. And two things suffered. I suffered because I was exhausted and felt badly about not meeting my commitments. And my sponsees weren't able to get what they needed. I wasn't able to be there in the way that I wanted to be. So again, what I've learned in this program is that I needed to be honest with myself about what was driving my decisions. I needed to work with my sponsor about that. I needed to talk to my higher power. And in the end, I needed to make different choices. And I needed to be honest with my sponsees in terms of what I could really offer, and be able to, again, be enough that I can't help everybody and let some people have the opportunity to get what they needed from someone else. And today, those lessons have taught me the ability to say, when somebody comes up to ask me if I will sponsor them, I can say, I can't right now, and know that I'm okay. that I'm not working a bad program, that I'm not giving back enough. I'm working a good program because my program teaches me that I need to put my higher power first, then my program, then me, then my family, and then others. And that is an important balance. And if I don't balance, I'm being selfish. So I say, I can't, or sometimes I say, I can, but this is what I need to be really clear about with you up front. Imagine coming from the family disease of alcoholism and saying clearly up front, here's what this might look like. My schedule is changeable. That means if we're going to work together, we have to have a changeable schedule and we both need to be flexible. And the great thing is, if your schedule is changeable, I can be flexible too. Oh my gosh, no black and white. No, it has to be perfect. All because of what I've learned in this program. I wanted to talk a little bit, switching from sponsoring and sponsorship to some of my other service. You know, I'm grateful for the steps for my personal recovery. I'm grateful for the traditions because they have really helped me in my relationships. And I'm incredibly grateful for the concepts because they have taught me how to operate in the world. I'm a working person, and in many cases, I need to rely on the principles that underline the concepts to be able to make healthy decisions for me. And I have come to learn here that when I make healthy decisions for me, then that often is of a benefit to my work colleagues and my organization as a whole. I recently discovered or rediscovered the introduction to the concepts in the service manual, and it talks about four principles. And, you know, I was really astounded at how those principles had made such a difference in my life. The first principle is the right of decision. And, you know, I first understood the importance of that right of decision when I was an AIS chairperson in Arizona. And we were having Al-Anon members having a conflict over the closing prayer. And we got ourselves stuck in the meeting where we couldn't close the meeting because we were in a conflict over the closing prayer. Only in Al-Anon, so delightful. And what, I had the right of decision. As the AIS chairperson, I had the right of decision to close the meeting, which I did in a way that accommodated, that supported all that we had discussed. But that was a right of decision. I have that. Sometimes that's hard for me, but today I have learned that I have that right. I can apply that life right in my work life and in my personal life. The right of participation, you know, that's another one that is so important. That means that my voice needs to be heard, and I need to listen. Oh my gosh, in my home life, that is so important. I am quite certain that I have all the answers, and I know the way that it should go. And that is always an opportunity for me to acknowledge the right of participation, my husband's right to participate and be a part of, and for me to listen. So I know I only have a couple minutes left. You know, I just, there are the right of appeal and the right of petition. I want to say those have also, you know, they sound very specific to Al-Anon, but for me, they have allowed me the opportunity to respect when people have an opinion different than mine and to listen carefully. And through that, I have found so many unexpected answers. This program makes my life manageable. This program makes my life joyful, and it makes it so much better for the people around me. And that all for me comes through service. So thank you very much for the opportunity to share.
Thank you, Valley. Awesome. Let's give her a round of applause with the sign language clap. That's fantastic. Let me find my script so I know what in the world I'm supposed to say. I know one thing I forgot to mention in between the other two speakers is that if you have questions for any of the speakers, please send them to Maureen in a private chat. So find her picture in the Monks of All, and in the upper right-hand corner of her picture, you can hit chat, and then that can, it'll open up a window so that you can send your questions for either Patrick, Valley, or Carrie. All right, so at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Maureen, who is our moderator, and she will take the rest of the time to get your questions answered. Maureen?
Okay, well, thanks, everybody. Those were really great shares. I kind of don't get to, it's pretty busy behind the scenes, you wouldn't believe. So I don't really get to listen to a lot, but what I did hear, I really appreciated. And I also want to thank you guys for taking the time to be here today. And sharing your experience, strength, and hope. Let's see. I've got a few questions from our membership, and I will let you know who the question is for. And if it's open to all of you, you know, one or the other or all three, please keep your answers brief, like a couple minutes or less, so we can answer as many questions as possible. And if you're on the phone and you have a question, you can use *9 to raise your hand to let me know. And when I call your name, you can unmute. And I might need to get the tech coordinators to help me out with that. If somebody raises their hand, I may miss it. So let me know if somebody does, so we don't bypass somebody's question. Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and start with, what is our first question? I have a question for Patrick. When you detach emotions from your opinion, when you're talking to loved ones, could you elaborate on how you did that?
Well, first, if I had not been going to my business meetings, and I love any business meeting I can get my hands on, I get in there because I'm going to learn things a lot more deeply in that business meeting than anywhere else. And that's a safer place for me to begin that process. So I go there first, and I, through learning how to detach my opinion in those business meetings, it's like anything. It forms a habit, this spiritual discipline that helps me learn how to live my higher power's way instead of my way. And so that way, when I go home, and I'm in that place that is not as safe, it's amazing to me how all of a sudden, and of course, I'm inviting my higher power in constantly through the day. That has to become a habit for me. Exchanging my will for its will, because I'm always trying to drag it back. I'm not perfect, but I'm making progress, right? So when those incidents come up, you know, it's amazing to me how all of a sudden I will have this sense of calm, and I'm able to listen and hear what that other person has to say. I may not agree with what they're saying, but I'm able to love them. And it's just through this habit, practicing at these other places, these safe places, that I'm able to do this with the help of a power greater than myself. I have to be able to cooperate. A friend reminded me of that last night in a share, and I loved that. I hadn't heard that in a while, although I tried to practice that daily, cooperate with this power that's greater than myself, that wants only what's best for me. So as I do that, I become fluent in Al-Anon, and it just kind of happens. So that would be my best suggestion, is get to as many business meetings as you can.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Patrick. Let's see. The next question is for Carrie. And as a person who has had only one sponsor in Al-Anon, could you give me some specific examples of the gifts that you have received from having several sponsors.
Sure, thank you. Each sponsor I've had was exactly what I needed at the time. My first sponsor, very gentle, very loving, kind of walked, you know, helped me get my toes into the steps, begin working. She, like I said, she was what I needed at the time. I had a couple different sponsors, a few actually in Georgia, and my sponsors at that time were very related to where I was in my life. My first sponsor, I was dealing with, some pretty big stuff in my home. My second sponsor, I was dealing with big stuff in my home and little kids and a career. And as I got closer and closer to my higher power and I returned, I returned to church, I moved on to a sponsor that I could share more openly with about those challenges as well. So from each of them, I got a very different perspective from their life perspective as well. And and out here in Colorado, you know, my sponsor also helps me with a lot of my service challenges as well, and has walked me through some pretty serious, profound changes in my home life. And so for me, their direct experience in the program has always been an influence on my program and how I work it and how I get perspective on different things that I'm walking through.
So. Okay, great. Thanks, Carrie. I have a question for all of the speakers. Let's start with Valley. How does honesty play a part when you either have to drop a sponsee or you have to let them drift away?
I think that's a tricky thing for me because part of my challenge is how to be honest without being brutal. Honest. So if I'm having a conversation with a sponsee because it's not working, the relationship doesn't seem to be working, then the best thing that I can find for me is come from a place of curiosity and seeking to understand and being open to what I'm hearing, and also knowing that, I guess the honesty is knowing that I am not all that powerful, and that even if things don't work out, that it is that I have a higher power and that person has a higher power, and so it will work out as it's supposed to. I don't know if that answered the question, but that's what I've got.
I think so. Thank you, Sally. And let's see, Carrie, can you answer that as well? How does honesty play a part when you either have to drop a sponsee or let them drift away?
Yeah. Honesty, I'm thinking about honesty from two different directions. Honesty with the sponsee and honesty with myself. Honesty with the sponsee, I have had a few drift away. In many cases, they were working multiple programs. And really found themselves needing to work their primary program more. One, I just had no real experience with a lot of what she was struggling with. And to be honest with her and say, I can't, that's not in my space. That's just, yeah, I don't know how to help with this. And being honest about that. But that part was being honest with myself as well, that I didn't have it to bring to that relationship because that was not my experience. And, you know, I had nothing even close to relevant to that. And getting past my own ego of thinking I could, you know, help and I could be of service there. And it was the kinder thing to do, the more loving thing to do was to, you know, be honest with myself and her and make that change.
Great. Thanks, Carrie. Patrick, you need me to repeat that one?
Nope. I got it. I'm okay. Patrick, grateful member. And let me preface it with I had a sponsee once that, still do, that wouldn't open the books because the word God was in there. Nobody else was really, or she wasn't probably that interested in anyone else because everyone referenced God. And I refer to my God as Bud because it likes being undefined. And I refer to it as it. And I feel no disrespect with that. Actually, I feel my higher power likes it. And we both kind of chuckle when I call my higher power Bud. And as he's chuckling now. But anyways, so she didn't want to open a book and she asked me, would I be her sponsor? And I didn't want to be her sponsor, but it came out of my mouth. Yes. And we got home and my higher power and I said, what were you thinking? How are we going to do this? I had no clue. How can I be a sponsor and not open a book? And, but anyways, so through that process, I learned flexibility. All I did was share and have shared experience, strength, and hope. And somehow that sponsee is now on step three and has gone through step three and is considering step four. I haven't heard back yet. You know, she's a very busy person and she calls when she can, and that's okay. You know, I don't set down rules for my sponsees, right? And so I met another young man, and it's interesting because I asked that young man this morning if I might be able to share on our experience, and he was gratefully, he said, I could. And so we met about a year or so ago, and he asked me to be his sponsor. And as we were going through that process, then, you know, sometimes we weren't able to get together. And I look at it as a sabbatical, you know, when I don't hear from sponsees. I've never actually had to let go of a sponsee, but they kind of come and go in my life. And I'm okay with that. It's I call it flexibility. And so sure enough, we were at a Zoom meeting and I saw his name and I recognized it. And he stuck around after the meeting because I was hosting it. So I was also closing it. And we were able to talk a little bit at the end. And he was like, I don't know if you remember me or not, but, you know, I'm so-and-so and I'm from this meeting and you were my sponsor. And I was like, yeah, it's good to see you, you know? And so we were just talking and he says, I know I need to do this, you know, will you sponsor me again? And I was like, heck yeah, you've always been my sponsee. He has never not been my sponsee. I'm always there for my sponsees. And we've begun sharing again, because I look at us as equals. It's an opportunity for me to gain in my recovery just as much as it is for them. So I believe in that principle of flexibility when it comes to sponsoring. And everything that I say, I hold in confidence. I don't share my sponsees' names with other people, nor do I share my sponsors' names. That's just me. And that seems to be what works for me, along with the principle of flexibility, and I'll pass.
Great, thanks, Patrick. Now I'm gonna ask Brenda from Colorado if she would share a couple minutes on the topic.
Thank you, Maureen. Hello, everyone, I'm Brenda. First, I have to say, wow, what an incredible conference. And, you know, I believe that there are no coincidences. This is God definitely hearing things about sponsorship and service is right where I'm sitting in my program right now. I could identify with everything that's been said by each and everyone who spoke already. For me, the concepts of service, honesty, and communication are evident by none of those things are present in the home I grew up in. And so to have those gifts brought to me and shown to me and practiced by the people that I went to meetings with and the people that have also sponsored me. I walked into my first home group. It wasn't my first meeting, but my first home group in Torrance, California in 1990, February of 1990. And I walked in and I walked from my apartment just down the street. And so I didn't have a purse or any money. And my first sponsor actually handed me the 12 and 12. That's what that meeting studied. And I'm like, oh, I can't, I don't have the money. And I said, she goes, that's okay. You can come back next week. And I was like, yeah, I will, right? I mean, whether it was the content of the meeting, I needed to go back to that meeting, right? To give them that money. I could not owe these strangers. You know, but the other part is within a month, they handed me the keys to the meeting and I opened the meeting. And one of the things that my sponsor taught me was my friend who came in about the same time, she was the coffee person. Well, she didn't show up 1 week. So I started doing the coffee and my sponsor said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm doing the coffee for her. Did she ask you? No, but you know, I'm just trying to help. And she said, no, she said, it's her responsibility. And right in front of me, when she walked in the next meeting, she said, if you can't make a meeting, you call someone and have that person take that responsibility for you. You become accountable. And it taught me many things. It taught me how she could do it with kindness, with love. And again, there's the honesty, there's the communication. And so many of those gifts have been shown to me through service, and service is absolutely a crucial tool in my recovery. So with that, I will pass. Thank you so much, Maureen, for asking me to share a bit.
No, thank you for taking the time, Brenda. We're glad you're here. Okay, I got a couple more questions. And let's see, this one is for Carrie. When you speak to someone about sponsoring them, are there things you ask them to be willing to do? And if so, what would they be?
I don't really. I'm in the, you know, we chat a while and, you know, see if there's a personality fit first. Because I tend to come from also a place of humor and I'm grateful to be able to laugh today in this program. But we talk a lot, we just kind of get to know each other. And it's been a big change here with COVID, not sitting in meetings physically together as much as well. I tend not to lay down any rules or anything. I'm incredibly flexible to start and figure out where we're going to go, to figure out where they are and where we need to start and where we're going to go together. So I actually leave it pretty open. So.
Patrick, do you have anything to add to that?
I'm already unmuted. I'm Patrick. And no, as I said before, I don't really have any rules. It's their program. It's unique to them. And they can let their higher power, as they discover that higher power, guide them in what is right for them. And if they don't have a higher power, that is the one thing I will ask them. Do you have a higher power? And if they say that they do not, then, or maybe they do, well, they can always use mine because there's plenty of it to go around and they can act as if. So that's about it. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Patrick. Let's see, I got one more question. This is for Carrie and Patrick. How has your sense of honesty grown as you have embraced the tradition and the concepts and applied them at the personal, group, and other service levels? Valley kind of spoke to that a little bit, so somebody'd like to know what Carrie and Patrick might have to add.
I'm Patrick, and honesty through sponsorship, that's what you were saying, correct? Did I hear you correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, I actually began learning honesty through the book Intimacy in the Alcoholic Relationship, and that carries through into sponsoring. It is so important for me to be completely honest with sponsees, with my other Al-Anon friends. Because if I'm not, one, I know they're just like me. I can see right through someone that's not being honest with me. And in order for me to be able to respect them, I have to have respect for myself first. And the only way I can have respect is through being honest with myself. So it's interesting to me how all of that works. It all really begins with that honesty, that intimate honesty. And if I don't have that as a part of my habitual makeup, then, boy, you know, that's a scary place for me to be when I look back on that. You know, I don't want to be like that ever again. And so I guess, if anything, sponsoring helps to keep me in practice.
Great. Pass. Thanks. Carrie?
Thanks for going first, Patrick. I like that we're talking about the traditions and the concepts as well, because they are so much of the relationship building aspect of the program. You know, we talk about this being a program of honesty, of rigorous honesty, and that's with ourselves, you know, and being able to look at ourselves and be vulnerable. Not my best thing. You know, where there was a great reading. I actually went to a meeting this morning. The reading was from Discovering Choices in chapter 14. The beginning of that chapter is a summary of the traditions. And it spoke so much to this. And I was thinking about how that would relate to our topic today. And that relationship building and the honesty and the trust that is built in the relationships through the traditions is such a big part of sponsorship. I don't know if I answered the question as it was asked, but that's kind of what I took away from my own thoughts there. So
great. That's all we can do. I appreciate your answer, Carrie. Thank you for doing that. I'm going to end with one more question, and it's for all of you. And I guess I'll start with Valley first. How do you make time for yourself?
Wow, that's the trick question, making time for myself. My commitment is my morning routines. I make that a priority for me, my connection with my higher power, my reading. I just make that a requirement, similar to getting sleep and eating. My morning routine is that important to me. I think that making sure that I resign as the general manager of the universe is a constant, a good note for myself in my daily routine, meaning I don't try and take on responsibilities which are not mine. I remember that I only need to be here today and be in this moment, and that my higher power has everything else. And if that is the case, then I don't need to be spending time worrying about that. I make sure that I stay committed to something that I really enjoy. And for me, that is renovating an old house. But that's the other way, because that is something I can do that is so focusing that it helps me from any of the gerbil cage. So those are the kinds of things I do to make time for myself.
Thanks, Valley. And real quick, we'll come back to that for the other two speakers if we have time, but I missed a question and I really thought this was a great question. I don't know why I missed it, but anyway, this is for all of you or any of you, whoever wants to answer first. What do you see as your primary purpose when you sponsor others?
I'm Patrick. That's easy. My recovery. I pass.
Thanks.
My sponsor once told me that her job was to lead me back to my higher power.
Great answer.
And so I take that into my relationships with my sponsees. That's my primary purpose there.
Thanks, Carrie. And Valley?
I would say my primary purpose is to be a reminder that we are not alone and that we are both walking this journey together, and that together it's better.
Great, thanks. Okay, so back to how you make time for yourself, Carrie.
Great question. For me, a lot of it's about discipline. I put my meetings on my calendar and I make them a priority. I take the time and the commitment I make to myself, and I honor that today. It used to be real easy for me to kind of shake off my morning workout or my morning readings and I'll get to it later. And, you know, my excuses get better all day long. They do. And so if I make the commitment to myself early in the day and keep that commitment, because I keep the commitments to myself just like I keep commitments to other people. And if I employ that discipline, I've already plotted out my time for myself. So thank you.
Great, thanks. And Patrick.
And yes, I like thinking of this gift wrap box. It's already gift wrapped and the lid comes off, but it's all gift wrapped, has a nice bow on it. It's big enough for me to climb into. I climb in with the light of my higher power, close that lid, and I hunker down in the present, right? That's where I need to be. And if I'm doing that, and I'm writing down my commitments on my calendar, and I'm checking my calendar, which COVID has made it possible for me to learn that more deeply, because with COVID, actually having COVID, it messes with your mind. And I have not been that perfect at checking my calendar, as my service sponsor will attest. But but as I get to continue practicing being in the present, writing things down, and then remembering to look at them, inviting my higher power in to help me, give me what I need when I need it. I think of the serenity prayer, having the serenity to slow that squirrel cage down. And then the courage, for me, that's tenacity, stick-to-itiveness. Keep looking. Hey, if you mess up, guess what? I get to learn from that. But I need to keep looking at what it is that I have scheduled. And so as I do that, I also need to be mindful of, okay, am I taking time for myself? Because I get kind of busy. Well, every time something comes up, I just had a recent thing where someone invited me to go four-wheeling with a group on a tour. We did. It was wonderful. I had a great time. You know, but being able to take that time in that present is some of the best me time I have every day. And I do that first thing in the morning and in the evening. And I'll pass.
Thanks, Patrick. Well, those were some great questions and very insightful answers. We only have a few minutes left, so it's time for me to turn this back over to our chairperson. Thanks for being here, everyone.
Al-Anon declaration. Let it begin with me. When anyone, anywhere,
let it begin with me.
Fantastic. Great job, guys.